Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode lucky number 13. This week, I had the pleasure of having a conversation with a fellow podcaster in the co-working industry. I just recently met Chris Estrada, and I can't get enough of talking shop with him. Chris's love affair with co-working started with his own success story, which started with a story of failure. Chris, with his fancy new MBA, got turned down by a big consulting company in Atlanta. With a little bit of attitude, and a little bit of not knowing what else to do, he decided to start his own consulting company out of a co-working space. Within a year, driven largely by his experience and network at the co-working space, he had outpaced the income that he would have made working for the other company that turned him down. Now Chris is passionate about helping other entrepreneurs be successful by introducing them to co-working. He interviews entrepreneurs on his weekly podcast show called Co-working Success. You can find the links to his show in our show notes at everythingcoworking.com/13. Chris shares some perspective on how smaller co-working spaces can compete with the bigger companies like WeWork. And we also talk about how intense hobbies like mountain biking and CrossFit can contribute to business success. I hope you enjoyed the show. Chris, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so excited about our conversation.
Yes, thanks for having me, Jamie. I'm stoked. I get to be on another podcaster's co-working podcast. I'm stoked. I'm so happy that you kicked this thing off. I know you were talking about it for a while, and you took action and made it happen. So I'm ecstatic to be on your show today.
Awesome. Well, it is. I feel really good that I made it happen. Like you said, whenever you plan something and think about it for a long time and actually get it launched, it's the most amazing feeling. But even better than that is getting to talk to people like you. And I met you because of co-working in the podcasting world. So you and I traded podcast interviews this week. So we'll have to share all the links to those when those are ready to go live.
Absolutely.
So Chris has his own. Well, so we're going to get into Chris's story into more detail shortly here. Chris, as I mentioned, has his own podcast called Co-working Success. Chris, let's just get started by, because I think a lot of your story will come out of this answer. What is it about co-working that inspired you to start a podcast called Co-working Success? And you have a directory site called The Operation Spot, which I also want to hear more about. So tell us how that all came about.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. So the way that this whole business and the Operation Spot, Co-working Success, the way that all came about was I was just finished my MBA. I was ecstatic. I was a web developer before that, and I said, "All right, just finished my MBA. I'm gonna go work for one of the top consulting firms here in Atlanta." I was stoked. I was like, "All right, you know, I find before I got my MBA, they told me I need an MBA. And after I got my MBA, they were like, "Hey, you need more work experience." I'm like, "Come on!" So I applied at this really fancy consulting company. We went through a couple interviews that I thought I'd nailed it and everything else, and they ended up not hiring me. They told me that I didn't want to say they told me I wasn't good enough, but they somewhat told me I wasn't good enough. And you know what? I said, you know what? I don't need you guys. I already have a pretty established network. I know what I bring to the table. So I said, forget you guys. I'm gonna go kick off my own company. So I quit my other job without even having a single client, Jamie. Can you imagine that? It's pretty terrifying now that I think about it. But
totally. Especially, I'm guessing there was a little debt that came along with your fancy MBA.
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of great debt and stories and tears and yeah. Blood and everything else. Everything that comes along with it.
You sound like such a fighter that it's hard for me to imagine that, you know, you sat down and you know, had a long day with a beer over this. You have so much energy around it now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I said, you know what? I'm going to launch my own consulting firm, and I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to do it with the people that I want to work with. And instead of doing it from my home, I'm going to do it from a co-working space. I'd heard a little bit about co-working, but I've never actually been in a co-working environment. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go experience this co-working space. I'm going to go all in. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be a part of the community. I'm going to engage with the people there and really help to serve the people there wherever I can. And within 8 months of working for myself, I surpassed the income that they were going to give me within 8 short months. And to me, that's co-working success in and of itself. And after being able to reach that number and that milestone, I said, you know, why aren't more people doing this? Why aren't more people co-working? And the answer simply came back, not enough people know about co-working, mm-hmm. let alone even how to spell it. And I'm sure you have this conversation all the time, Jamie, whenever you talk to somebody about co-working, they always say, excuse me, what? Do you mean your co-worker? No, I mean co-working.
Totally.
So I kicked off the company, and then originally it was going to be a directory site for all the co-working spaces in the world. And then I said, you know what? The world does not need another co-working directory out there. So I really wanted to focus on highlighting all the great people that work out of the space that make this entire industry co-working.
Yeah, I love it. So I love to hear your story. And Chris tells his story on his first episode on his podcast. So I hope you'll go over and check it out. And we'll include links to that in the show notes. But it's called the Co-Working Success Podcast, and you can find it on iTunes. But I don't get sick of hearing that story because it's so inspiring. And it's such a testament to the value of co-working. And I'm kind of picturing you when you were doing this, like you're all like, I want to high five you every time I hear that story.
Thank you.
It's totally like, yeah, so I said, take that. And I did it.
I love it.
But I know, because you're just a real guy like the rest of us, that you probably were feeling some hard times and some trepidation when that was all going on. And if you were doing that at home, that could have just eaten you up, you know. That could have held you back.
It really could have. And what I love about the co-working spaces is it's so many opportunities to connect with people. And it's one of the things I like to say is, you know, it's a way that, how would you like to grow your business in 60 seconds or less? And that 60 seconds is the amount of time it takes for somebody to walk in that door and meet you, and for you two to have a conversation and say, hey, you know, I have somebody that you should probably meet, or for them to say, hey, you know, I could possibly use your services. Let's take this conversation further. And I've landed some of my biggest clients from being a part of a co-working space, hands down.
Yeah, and you and I talked about this on our interview a few days ago, but I think it's worth mentioning again. I think the neat thing about that is you could say the same thing about any networking event, like, oh, the next person you meet, you know, in 60 seconds could be a major contact. But the thing is it doesn't happen that often. Because you don't build a relationship by handing someone a business card at a networking event.
Absolutely.
But when you're in a co-working space, you know, everybody's guard is kind of down because everybody's there doing work, and you know that anybody who's there is there because they want to be a part of the community. And so it's just more genuine. And because of that, things happen easier and faster.
They really do. And the amount of time it takes to close a deal is so much quicker because, like you said, you've already built that rapport, you've already built that trust factor, and they know that they're going to see you every day, and they're going to be accountable to the work, and they're going to do good work.
Yeah, totally. So anyway, thank you for sharing your story. I love it.
So yeah, thank you.
So you do this podcast, you work out of a couple of co-working spaces in Atlanta, and you, I know you go to, so I've met you at the Global Co-Working Unconference Conference in Berkeley this year.
That's
so
juicy.
Totally. I know you're out and about. So if you were to pull out the Chris Estrada crystal ball, what would it tell us about the landscape of co-working in, say, 2020?
Oh, geez. The Chris Estrada crystal ball. I'd be careful peering into that Chris Estrada crystal ball because there's a lot of stuff floating around in there, especially in the future. But as far as co-working and where I see it, I see a lot more niche co-working spaces. And we're already starting to see that, but we're starting to see some more co-working spaces that are just focused on CPAs, on attorneys, mm-hmm. on co-working kitchens is one of the ones that I love. Is that, there's such an opportunity for co-working kitchens because there are a lot. The food industry is booming. There are a lot of There are a lot of people that are quitting their corporate jobs and saying, you know, I want to go open a food truck, or I want to create my own catering business or something like that. And there is, besides commercial kitchens, there isn't really an opportunity. There aren't really any places that these chefs can go try out new things and host events. And co-working kitchens is pretty big, but I see co-working just really touching every industry and taking place in more areas, such as malls and airports. I mean, Jamie, how many times have you been sitting in an airport and be like, oh my gosh, I just wish I had a quiet place that I could sit down and do a little bit of work?
Yeah, I can't wait until that happens.
Yeah, and I think it's coming sooner rather than later. There's so many regulations and red tape that you have the space owners having to go through to make that happen. Yeah. But if more of the public demands that, hey, you know, we want this in the airports, then some of the big players are going to start coming into these airports and saying, hey, you know, we are now offering co-working to airports. I mean, it's such a profitable model for them. I mean, think about, have you seen those I think they're like little sleep rooms or whatnot at the airports?
I have not seen one yet.
They're unreal. We're in the wrong business, Jamie. It's like it's like $100 for a 30-minute nap or something like that.
I know.
That.
It sounds
or
like
actually, I don't even think it's 30 minutes. I think they charge in 15-minute increments. I don't even think they change out the pillow. So I see co-working really taking place in all different areas. There was a grocery store in Utah. I can't remember the name of it, but it was so neat. It was just this open, beautiful grocery store, kind of like a Whole Foods, and there were all these open tables for people to openly co-work.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's going to start to happen anywhere where people already are, because the convenience factor is going to go up. It's going to be a lot easier to get to spaces or to use them on a drop-in basis, like in the airport. I hope they put the ones in the airport right next to the wine bars. All the airports are starting to get those awesome little wine bars.
And it has to have a little cup holder on the desk.
Totally. Exactly. Somebody will make that happen. So you work with businesses on marketing. It's kind of your area of focus, strategic marketing, social media, search engine optimization. So this is an area I see a lot of co-working spaces struggling with. What's a piece of advice, given your experience, that you would give to someone who's struggling a little bit with marketing for their space?
Sure. So there are a couple different ways. And a lot of consultants will tackle this and say, well, you need to do no more social media. You need to do more Facebook. You need to be more Twitter. I like to get down to the foundation of what the business is. And I like to ask these spaces, and just like I ask any business, I mean, who do you need to be to have the success that you want? How are you showing up in the community? How are you physically presenting yourself? How are you presenting yourself to new members? Are you facilitating enough environments for more of these collisions that you and I talk about? Are you facilitating more and more environments for these to occur? It's all about knowing who you serve and what problems you are solving. Too many co-working spaces are just opening up and doing that whole thing of, if we build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. That strategy can cost you some very valuable time and resources in this increasingly growing and competitive. And it's going to be really competitive co-working industry. You can't be everything to everyone, and you just have to really know who you serve and the types of people that are in your space.
Yeah, I think that's just really smart, fundamental thinking, and then you drive some of your tactics out of that. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, we really talk about, all right, well, if you are a less tech type space, you know, what types of people are you trying to attract to the space? And are you coming off with all of your marketing materials and messaging? Are you coming off like you want to attract that crowd?
Yeah.
So it's about the people, not the desks.
Totally. So kind of a related question, but I love kind of tapping your marketing expertise and your co-working expertise. It's kind of a fun combo to be, so I'm going to leverage that. So from a branding standpoint, we're starting to see sort of the Starbucks of co-working appear, like the WeWorks and Industrious. But there's still a lot of, you know, spaces that have one or two locations, you know, that want to really commit to the community and make it work. How do you think they should think about differentiation from the bigger players?
There are a number of ways. I mean, one, it's really differentiating by really supporting their members, because, you know, how much support are they really giving their members? Are they really showcasing them and the amazing things that their businesses are changing? For example, I was in a co-working space the other day, and I learned of this one gentleman that's an app developer, and his app that he developed, it's a game that helps people fight addictions.
Wow.
And it was some really, really powerful stuff, and it's kind of like a swipe. It's kind of like a fruit ninja meets drug dealer, like where you're swiping, instead of swiping fruit, you're swiping like bags of drugs and beer bottles and everything else. And according to him, he said that people that use this app are more likely to become sober and not return to this destructive path. And it's those local co-working spaces that are they telling those stories of the companies and the people that are really creating some life-changing things out of their spaces. And another way is just really differentiate themselves through the types of events that they're hosting. Do more events outside of your community. Too many co-working spaces are wondering, hey, you know, can we diversify things? And, you know, do we need to have different types of events here? No, go outside of your community, because when you meet people outside of your community, they're going to be more open to talking with you and everything else. So one idea I mentioned, and I have a webinar that I host on occasion. It's called Five Proven Strategies to Market Your Co-working Space.
I didn't know about this. That will go in the show notes. I'm glad that came up.
Yeah. So I will let you know when the next one's going to be. But one of the ones that I mentioned on there is go sponsor a lounge area at a local food festival. Mm-hmm. Think about the number of people that have these food festivals, and if you just had a corner next to one of the restaurants that's either close by or right down the street from you, people will come over there to that local space and to that local restaurant, and then they're going to see your booth and say, "Hey, you know, I go to this restaurant all the time, and I see your place, but I have no idea what it is." And it's your opportunity right there to say, "Hey, this is what we are. We are here to support the local community, drive economic development, and then really help people grow their business and help them scale to become successful by being a part of our community." And that is something that those bigger players are not doing. They're just providing a fancy desk in a fancy part of town, and then saying, "Hey, you know, we're co-working."
Yeah, I love that. That's such a great suggestion, because it's an easy one for anyone to implement, because food festivals are everywhere.
They are. And it doesn't have to just be limited to food festivals.
Right,
I mean,
totally,
it could be a jazz festival.
Or the music, right.
Any type of think about what types of events are taking place in your community. And being that it's summertime, there are lots of great events taking place. So figure out what kind of tie-in. And one way that you can do that is partner up with your local metro chamber and see how you can support them, because they're always looking. It's interesting. It's a revolving model, because the metro chamber is always looking for support, but we also need to support them and figure out what types of initiatives, and they know what's going on in the community and what businesses are coming and what businesses could potentially benefit from being in your space.
Yeah, I love it. Great suggestion. So I'm curious, what role does having a podcast play in your marketing strategy?
Yeah, so one of the ways that podcasting plays through my marketing strategy is, for me, it's about building exposure for the co-working industry. And I also want to build exposure for the people that have the guts to quit their jobs and put it all out there and then fully believe that, hey, you know, even though I'm not getting a paycheck today, I'm still gonna show up every day and pursue this thing, because I know it's gonna happen. I want everybody to know how great co-working is, and as being part of my marketing strategy, I want it to really help me be that authority and saying, hey, you know, I'm one of the biggest advocates for co-working, and I would love your support. I would love for you to have your guests on my podcast, and I would love to help more people learn about the industry and how it could really help grow them. And my whole mission is I want to influence and drive a million people, Jamie. I want to influence and drive a million people to pursue their purpose and develop success through joining a local co-working space. And I use the word develop success, because you're not going to be successful just by showing up, but you will be successful if you go there and, like you said, you engage with the community and you interact with the community and you help serve the community.
Chris, I like how you make no small plans. A million people. I think you're on it. Well, if anybody's listening and has any guest suggestions for Chris, we'll make sure we include his contact information.
I'd love it. Thank you.
You know, on a side note, so Mike LaRose has been on my podcast, and he works on the Juicy team, and I saw him post on Facebook the other day, yesterday, I think, that he missed a flight. Did you see that?
He missed a flight. I was laughing so hard about that.
Because he was talking about co-working with some strangers, and, you know, your passion reminds me of that, like, just this wild commitment to getting people into the benefits of co-working.
And so. I could just see the look on Mike's face, and I can't wait to hear him when he listens to this episode. I could just imagine him sitting there, and he didn't just miss a flight because it was like a 45-minute layover. It was a three-hour layover, so it must have been a pretty intense conversation.
Yes. Well,
I could just imagine him sitting there and be like, "You're just not getting it."
Totally. A passionate bunch we have here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about your mountain biking. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what you do. Mountain biking is kind of your passion and your hobby. And I always am interested in people's perspective on what it does for their business to have a hobby like that that they passionately pursue.
Well, one, it's a big de-stressor for me. It's an opportunity for me to take a step back away from the business and allow me to be in nature and think about the business. Believe it or not, Jamie, I come up with some of my best ideas when I'm on the mountain bike. Mm-hmm. And mountain biking can be, you can relate it a lot to business in a certain degree, because there are a lot of routes. Especially where I ride, I'm from here. I live here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I mountain bike all over the country wherever I can. But over here in Georgia, especially, there are a lot of routes. There are a lot of trees. There are a lot of climbs, and there are a lot of downhills. And it's very similar to how it is in business. You really have to navigate things, and sometimes things will come up, and it's just, you know, you have to somewhat look further ahead, just past the turn, because you don't want to hit a tree, a rock, or a root the wrong way, or you're gonna fall, and it's not gonna be good. So I equate the mountain biking piece to just really, really being an avenue to just really think and just be out there. And I've made some really amazing connections through mountain biking. Believe it or not, I've actually had some different business meetings with various clients on the mountain bike trails. Nice.
Mountain biking's the new golf course.
Mountain biking is a new golf course, which I play golf too, but okay. I love the mountain biking trails. It's great. And I do 6-hour mountain bike races. It's an endurance race where we race for 6 hours, and it's just doing the most amount of laps in the least amount of time. So it's just as intense as it sounds.
Yeah. Wow.
and I equate that endurance to being an entrepreneur, and you know what it's like too. I mean, being an you read so many stories about these business owners and entrepreneurs that they claim to be, that people view them as being overnight successes, but they've been really working at it for 5-10 years, maybe a little bit shorter, or sometimes maybe a little longer. And it's really being in there, being focused and sticking with it and navigating those hills and valleys to be successful.
Yeah, I feel like it's a sort of an avenue to practice that persistence and determination. Like, I was running this morning, and I've been doing a lot of running already this week, and it's hilly here, so my car was parked up a hill, and I could see the car, and I wanted to stop running. And I said to myself, you don't stop until you get to the finish line. And, you know, I've been working on some challenging things related to business. And I was like, that's, you know, if you stop running, then you're kind of telling yourself it's okay to not, you know, to sort of stop in all aspects. Like, I really look at it as like, it's that mental discipline across everything in life that you're practicing when you do and sort of sports activities, and so I kind of look at it that way, and it's just good practice.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is that whole mental thing of sticking to something and committing to it. This is going to make you shriek, Jamie. A couple weeks ago around Memorial Day, I jumped on my road bike and I said, I'm going to ride 50 miles today. I hadn't been on my road bike in probably about 3 months, and I jumped on the bike, did 50 miles. Yeah, by mile 30, my legs were shot.
Yeah, yep.
Completely shot. They're so shot, I couldn't even, I had to like roll up to a bench, lean over on it. I couldn't even bend my legs.
Did you finish?
I did. I finished. I finished, and it was just, it was really intense. I mean, I could seriously barely walk. I could barely get off the bike. But at the end, I said, you know, I really equate this to this journey and mission that I set out on. You know, I didn't quit, and I just kept going with it. And the same thing happens in business. You're gonna have things come up. You know, you think you might land this big client and everything else, and next thing you know, something will fall through. But something better could come as a result of it. But just be enjoy the moment, take it for what it is, and just and be happy with where you are, and make sure you have the right people around you.
Yeah, and you know, the other analogy I'll make to your 50-mile ride is that it was hard, but you just kept doing it. And I think that's the thing about business, is most people don't. You know, people stop. And there are a lot of good reasons sometimes for stopping. I mean, people have families to support, or, you know, or they just, but like mentally, they just kind of get done. And but in so many things in life, if you just keep going, like by the nature of how it works, other people will not. And so even if you're not like the smartest guy in the room or the whatever, like by the fact that you just kept going, you might win. And I always try to remind myself of that. Like, you know, you might sort of have some disadvantages, but if you just keep hanging in there and finish that 50 miles, even if you can't bend your legs.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. And those 6-hour races are no different. I'll usually do about 70. Yeah. I'll usually do about 70 miles on a mountain bike during that time.
Yeah. Wow. Good. Well, I love the mindset, and that's the mindset of success. And I love that you're applying that to the co-working industry.
Thank you.
Well, Chris, I always love talking to you, and today was no exception. Thanks for sharing your story and a lot of your perspectives on the co-working industry. I'll put all this in the show notes, but just tell everybody the easiest ways to find you.
Yeah, the easiest ways to find me, I am very active on Twitter. It's at OperationSpot. You can check me out over there. As Jamie mentioned, my podcast is called Coworking Success. And then my website is operation-spot.com. If you type in operationspot.com, all in one word, you're going to get a spay and neuter clinic. I think
I did that yesterday. I was like, what?
So I'm sure when I came along, these people were like, what is co-working? This Chris Estrada guy is taking over all of our stuff. But I'm very active on LinkedIn as well. You can find me there, Chris Estrada. And then if there's, you know, I'm always looking to meet awesome people that are looking to kick off a company and do so from a co-working space. And as Jamie mentioned, I love marketing, and I'm always willing to share some knowledge. So if you just want to connect with me, I'm like Jamie. I consider myself a connectrapreneur. I love connecting people. So if you feel like there's somebody that I should meet, I'd love to connect.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you. This was so much fun. I love it. Thanks for having me on your show today, Jamie.
Thanks for joining us. awesome. Okay, we will talk soon.
Cool. Sounds good.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.